Well, good morning. We're in the book of Job. Really? Chapter 32. This morning is going to be a little different. Got a new guy on the scene. Elihu. Elihu is going to speak from chapters 32 through chapter 37. That's six chapters. I want to say a couple of things as we get started here. The first one is, don't be intimidated by people who write books. Okay? Sadly, there are a number of Christians who come to church every Sunday and they pick up a Christian book, especially if it's a scholarly looking book or sounding book, and they think that everything they read in there is going to be right. And that's not the case. I read after you know, several books on the book of Job. I have probably, I guess, four or five commentaries that I will read kind of after the night before the sermon, just to kind of see if somebody has a fresh way of saying things or whatever. And one of the commentary series that I have enjoyed, just because they say things different than I talk. They don't talk Southern Arkansas, you know. They don't write that way. And so they'll say things in a different way. It's the Daily Bible series, sometimes called Barclay's Commentaries. All the New Testaments are written by William Barclay, I believe. The Old Testament was written by several different guys. And they look kind of like this. They're a multiple color. Some of them are purple. Some of them are green. I don't know what all they are. This particular one happens to be whatever color that is. Right there. They're not always that trustworthy, especially the Old Testament. And I say that because I'm going to read you something. I haven't been getting much out of this one, tell you the truth, in the book of Job. And chapter 31, this guy has 9 pages of commentary on chapter 31. I looked it up to see what he had to say about chapter 32, what we're going to talk about today. He says, "For the speeches of Elihu, which with many other scholars I do not regard as original to the book of Job, see the appendix, in which they are set forth with brief comments." Why bother? You know, if you don't think they're part of the original book of Job, then don't comment at all, you know, just forget it. Listen to what he says. "It is my view that both dramatically and theologically, the speeches of the Lord from the whirlwind," which starts in chapter 38, "must follow at this point. Our patience has been stretched to breaking point and cannot be asked to endure another intrusion of human words." So, if I'm tired of listening to these guys, then just claim it don't belong. Okay, when you read something like that, you know, just forget it. You know, it's not... not worth the comments. Elihu. Who is Elihu? We'll see a few bits and pieces of information about him. We'll see that he's a young guy. He's younger than Job. He's younger than Job's three friends. Some have suggested, and I've managed to live 58 years of my life and not know this, but some have suggested that Elihu is a good guy, that he's on the right track, that he's got good things to say, that he is indeed a spokesman for God, that he is indeed, some would even go so far to say, a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. Okay, now maybe that's so, but as we go through these six chapters, just kind of keep that thought in mind and see what you think. Maybe so, maybe not. If I thought that were indeed the case, that here is a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus Christ, then I would be very cautious about how I critiqued what he has to say. Right? I would have a total different outlook on it. Now maybe I should. I don't know. So I'm not committing one way or the other. That was a new thought to me within the last 6 months or so, and we'll see. So ask yourself these questions as we go through these six chapters over the next 6 weeks. Does Elihu say things that are not right? Does he say things that are untrue, that are unscriptural, that go against the scripture? And also another new thought that was just new to me just 2 or 3 weeks ago. Chapter 38, and this wasn't new, but it says God spoke to Job out of the whirlwind. Okay? Now, I have always assumed that God showed up, you might say, or God manifests his presence as he begins speaking to Job, not only speaking to him, but manifesting his presence with a whirlwind. Maybe that's so. But we'll see what I had not put together is a few verses in the prior chapter or two where Elihu is talking about and it seemed to be using literally clouds, thunder, lightning, and stuff as imagery. And I had always thought that he was just, you know, using word analogies, picture analogies to make his point. But perhaps it's more than that. Perhaps literally a storm is coming up, and someone has suggested this, that a storm is brewing, just like a hurricane is brewing in Florida. And really, Job and his friends are sitting here and a storm is approaching, and Elihu is using the storm in his speeches, and it may be a storm that God is brewing up because God is preparing for his presentation and his comments to Job. So those are some thoughts. I don't know where to go with them. Hopefully by the time we finish the next six chapters, we'll have a little better grasp on what to think of those things. Years ago, when my sons were small, is Charlie here? There's Charlie. Hey, Charlie, how you doing? When my sons were about Charlie's age, or Eli and Sam's age, we lived 100 yards from my parents. And you'd have to know my dad and his brothers, but they were pranksters. They were jokers and loved to aggravate, especially their grandson. And my dad would tell, you'd use any opportunity that came along to get my boys riled up about something or to see how outlandish something he could get them to believe or whatever. One day they were there in the discussion, and I wasn't there. My dad was telling me this account. And so I may not have it exactly right. Daniel probably remembers more about it than I do. The subject was being wormy. Wormy. Okay. I don't know if they were talking about the dog getting worm medicine, you know, getting worm pills or what, but they were talking about worm, being wormy. And so my dad goes to explaining to them how people can have worms, and tapeworms in particular. So he's explained to them kind of what that's like. And he doesn't have a clue what it's like, you know. He's just making it up as he goes. He says, you know, it's a long, skinny worm, be in your stomach, and it will start climbing up from your stomach up through your throat. And he's talking, you know, kind of in hushed, serious, somber tones, and they're about Charlie's age, and they're sitting there, you know, just. Oh, was he? Okay. Oh, no. Yeah, he had them going for years. They were sitting there all wide-eyed just listening. And my dad was, you know, he crawled up the back of your throat. And, you know, Mark's there, and you make your throat itch. He said about that time, Mark went, He busts out laughing, and they knew they'd been had. You know, clearing one's throat. You see, I've entitled a message that. There's a reason for that. The reason is a text that John McCarty sent me this past week, and I want to read it for you if I know how to work this phone. Let's see. He says, this is kind of long, but I'll read it off. It's not real long. He says, John McCarty sent me this. He says, I don't quite know what to make of Elihu. There are those that believe he's a type of Christ, and there are those that believe he's a type of Elijah. So there's something else for you to think about. Still others, like Mason said, whoever Mason is, you have to ask John, despite all the good that might be said about Elihu, the fact remains that he really is an astonishing, pompous little windbag. Okay, now, if I thought this was a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, I wouldn't be using those terms, but anyway. Notice what he says. He takes the entire 32nd chapter, for example, plus portions of 33, simply to clear his throat and announce that he has something important to say. And that's a good description. We got six chapters going here, and it seems to me like it takes Elihu a while to get wound up, to get started. See on your outline, I've got 5 points. The first four have little to do with Elihu's message, but it has something to do with just wise principles for living. So I don't want to pass up the opportunity to share them. Let's read verse 1. So these three men ceased answering Job. What three men is that? Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, right? They ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Let's go ahead and read the first 4 or 5 verses. Then the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite of the family of Ram, was aroused against Job. His wrath was aroused because he justified himself rather than God. Also against his three friends, his wrath was aroused because they had found no answer and yet had condemned Job. Now because they were years older than he, Elihu had waited to speak to Job. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, his wrath was aroused. So Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, and he goes on. We're going to stop there for a minute. First point I want to give you is this. Don't cast your pearls before swine. Once you recognize the swine. All right, that verse is found, I think, in Matthew chapter 7. Jesus is speaking there. But if you look at the context, the idea is when someone has wronged you or wronged somebody else, or they have are sinning or whatever the case may be, and you're trying to help them, you're trying to confront them, if they continually and habitually won't listen to your rebuke, there comes a point where you've got to let it go. And your pearls in this instant is wisdom. Don't give your wisdom to those who despise it, to those who reject it. Once you see a person is mocking your truth, the truth, then there comes a point where you've got to let it go. Now, this verse tells us these three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous. Job was righteous in his own eyes. Now, I don't think that means that God is telling us that Job was righteous in his own eyes. I think the idea is there that they quit answering Job because their perception of Job was he's not listening. He will not listen to anything we've got to say. He is an unrepentant sinner, and it's time to hush. So they hush. that idea, you apply, I would almost imagine that most people in this room have applied that principle without even being consciously aware you're doing it. There comes a point where you know there's no need of saying anything about it. Okay? That's the first thing. We see that in these three guys. They may have been wrong, they may have been right. But their perception was Job's not listening, Job is unrepentant, he doesn't care about anything we say, let's just shut up. So they do. So we see that in verse 1. The second point is this. This one's a little harder. Be careful about getting angry and taking up an offense for God. Notice what it says in verse 2. Then the wrath of Elihu. Elihu's mad. Elihu is angry. Then the wrath of Elihu was aroused against Job. Why was Elihu angry at Job? It tells us. Because he justified himself rather than God. Elihu has sat here and listened to Job over and over again declare that he is right, that he is innocent, and that God is mistreating him. He justifies himself rather than justifying God's behavior. Elihu don't like that. I wouldn't either. Okay? Let me ask you something. Do you have the tendency, when you hear someone speak against God, for the hair on the back of your neck to stand up? I do. Okay, some of us are worse than others at that. I do, but let me ask you a question. In this scenario, Job is doing all this spouting off and it's making Elihu mad. Is God hearing this? I think so. God is in heaven listening to everything Job is saying. Is God mad at Job? No. If God's not mad at Job for saying it, why should I be? God doesn't need me to defend him. Now, I enjoy doing it and probably do a bad job of it, which makes matters worse. Okay? God doesn't have to have us to defend him, especially if we are perceived as being a little hot under the collar. All right, if we're going to defend God and do it with anger, I would guess that most of the time we need to be quiet. We need to wait until we can articulate ourselves calmly and not with anger. Number three, unjust condemnation should arouse you in your spirit. Let's look at verse 3. Also, against his three friends, or against Elihu, against Job's three friends, was his wrath aroused. So Elihu is mad also at Job's three friends. Why is he angry at Job's three friends? Well, it tells us that too. Because they found no answer, yet condemned Job. Okay, he sat here and listened to all this, and Job's friends have not been able to convince Job. He, according, in his perspective, they have not had a convincing argument to confront Job with, and yet they still condemn him. There's no evidence, and yet they sentence him to God's judgment. When we see that, person to person, not man to God, or God to man, but when we see that on a personal level, one man against another, and we see this man unjustly condemning this man, should it arouse us with a little righteous indignation? I think so. And we have to keep a check on that. We have to watch how we, to what extent we voice that and how we do it and all that kind of stuff. But there ought to be something in us that is angry when we see other people unjustly condemned. So in this sense, I would say Elihu's wrath perhaps is justified. Not against God, but against these other three guys. Then the fourth thing. Young men should show deference to older men in many ways. Now, this is something that seems like to me our culture is losing. When I was in the seventh grade at Heber Springs Schools, the seventh grade through the 12th grade were all in the same building. That's a pretty wide range of maturity, pretty wide range of size. And us seventh graders showed some measure of respect, not just to the teachers, but to the upperclassmen. You smart off, seventh grader smart off to 11th or 12th grader, you might find yourself kind of forced up against the wall a little bit with somebody's hand on your throat and a teacher just sitting there watching. A measure of respect for older people, not just 7th grade, 11th grade. I'm talking about children to an adult. Now, this is hard to do, especially in a culture where we are increasingly feeling unsafe. I was taught and tried to teach my sons when an adult tells you to stop doing something, stop doing it. I didn't necessarily make a list of adults that applied to. Let me give you an example. If I'm walking down the sidewalk and I'm meeting two young kids coming this way down the sidewalk, and over here beside the sidewalk is this lady's nice flower garden, freshly weeded, nice zinnias growing up, really pretty. And they just decide for a prank to go through there and scuff their feet all through it and mess it all up. What should I do? I don't know, but I'll tell you what I would do. I would say, hey, quit that. They're not my kids. I don't even know them. But I would tell them, quit messing up that lady's garden. I don't even know her. Now, years ago, those kids would have quit. If, perchance, one of those kids said, looked at me and said, just make me. I don't know what happened. It wouldn't be pretty, I'm afraid. I'd end up in jail or something. I don't know. We hope that ever reaches that point. Okay, but I taught my kids, when an adult tells you to quit doing something, don't do it. Because generally, the vast majority of the time, there is going to be a wise, good reason they're telling you. Now, on the other hand, I would, in the same breath, I would teach them this. There are exceptions. If some guy tells you to get in the car with him, don't get in the car with him. If some guy tells you to do something wrong, don't do it. And that is a hard place to put a kid who is unable, and at the age where he is unable to always distinguish between what's right and what's wrong. That's a tough place to put a kid. That may have been 40 years ago that I'm thinking along those lines. nowadays, I would be more reluctant to tell my kid, if an adult tells you to do something, do it. Okay? It's a little different world in which we live. I understand that. But as a general rule, young people need to be taught to respect older people. They've been here longer. They've been around the block a few more times. This ain't their first rodeo, right? They know a few more things than us young folks. That time span of old folks is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. However, that is not always the case, is it? Just because someone's old doesn't mean they're wise. Okay, it means they perhaps ought to be, but not always. And that's where Elihu is at in our story, in our text. Look at what he says in verse 4. Now, because they were years older than he, Elihu had waited to speak to Job. Elihu is showing deference to these older men because he's a young guy. But he's listened, and he's listened, and he's listened. And he's hearing nothing in his thoughts that's a whole lot worth listening to. He's hearing these three guys condemn Job on little or no evidence. He's hearing Job badmouth God, and he don't like that. And he's listened, and he's waited, and he's waited. And now there's a break. Job has finished speaking. None of the three friends are responding. And in the stillness of that moment, he stopped. He starts talking. And let's see what he says in verse 6. I am young in years, and you are very old. Therefore, I was afraid and dare not declare my opinion to you. I said age should speak, and multitude of years should teach wisdom. But there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Great men are not always wise, nor do the aged always understand justice. So Elihu begins his speech with these words. I've waited. I'm a young person. You guys are older than I am, so I dared not to interrupt you, to speak out of place. I need to show deference to your wisdom that comes from years. But there, and here's another little clue that some say that this is God's spokesperson. He says there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty is giving me understanding. The breath of God gives me understanding, he says in verse 8. And then he makes the comment. Older men are not always right. The aged person doesn't always have wisdom, does not always understand justice. Then beginning in verse 10 through the end of the chapter, Elihu begins to clear his throat. All right? You'll notice I've got under that last point. Let me clear my throat. There are six points. Let's just read them looking at the outline. Verse 10, he says, I will speak. Verse 11 and 12, he says, I waited and I listened. Verse 12 to 15, you have failed to be convincing. Verse 16, I waited. Verse 17 to 20, I must speak. Verse 21 to 22, I won't take sides. So he rehashes this same few points over and over and over, and we're not even in the 33 yet as well. So here is Elihu's, as he begins to make his point, we're calling it, let him clear his throat. So let's read these verses. Verse 10, therefore I say, listen to me, I also would declare my opinion. Indeed, I waited for your words, I listened to your reasonings while you searched out what to say. I paid close attention to you, And surely not one of you convinced Job or answered his words. Lest you say, we have found wisdom, God will vanquish him, not man. Now he has not, this is talking about Job, he has not directed his words against me, so I will not answer him with your words. They are dismayed and answer no more. Words escape them. And I have waited because they did not speak, because they stood still and answered no more. I also will answer my part. I too will declare my opinion. For I am full of words. Now notice these next verse or two. The spirit within me compels me. Indeed, my belly is like wine that has no vent. It is ready to burst like new wine skins. I will speak that I may find relief. I must open my lips and answer. So Elihu is giving us a picture of someone who just can't hold back. He says, I've cut my lips zipped as long as I can. I've got to talk. I've got to say what I think needs to be said. And so he begins. Then the last two verses, he says, let me not, I pray, show partiality to anyone, nor let me flatter any man. For I do not know how to flatter, else my Maker would soon take me away. He says, I'm not going to take sides. I'm not going to take Job's side against you, and I'm not going to take your side against Job. What I'm going to tell you is the truth. And we, at that point, we'll stop and leave it for John. Let's pray. Father, again, we thank you for your word. Thank you for the depths to which it can touch our lives. God, help us to see these things that we practice on a daily basis. God, give us wisdom. Give us understanding. God, above all, give us grace. Give us a love and a commitment to walk with you, Lord, through every thing that we face. In Christ's name I pray, amen.